Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. The great Soto Zen monk Ryokan, back in, was it about the 18th century, I think, is when he lived, was of course a great poet. And one of his poems, he speaks of reading Dogen Shobo Genzo late at night, all alone in his little hut, and weeping as he read it. And he had something to weep about, not only because of its beauty and profundity, but because, as hard as it may be to imagine this, in most of Soto Zen at the time, Shobo Genzo was buried and lost. The way he felt about Dogen's profound and magnificent teaching is the way I feel about Rev. Master Jiyu's teaching, and in particular how to grow lotus blossom, which is no secret to most people who have trained with me or who listen to my Dharma talks or read things that I write. And I'll tell you right out that, and I don't think this is a great secret either, that certainly one of the reasons that I have put a considerable amount of effort into talking about, writing about how to grow a lotus blossom is because that is the teaching that is most likely to be buried in the way that happened to the Shobo Genzo. And there's no question about that. It doesn't matter that it happens to be, it is. Of course, it's far more than this, but just at the most superficial level, it is one of the great classics of world religious literature and will one day be recognized by that, by a lot more than just a few people. But of course, it's more than that. It's the account of the deepest kind of spiritual experience, and it expresses as much as can be expressed in words, the most profound teaching. For many years I have thought, I have believed, and I think now and I believe now that this was given to us through the vehicle of a human being as an answer to that person's and other people's longing for the perfection of Zen. Rev. Master was asked when she came to the gates of Soju-ji, this is a formal ceremony that's done, the new trainee who's entering to be a monk is asked, you know, what have you come for? And she said, and how can you help but admire and love the magnificence and courage of this response? She said, the perfection of Zen. She had come for the perfection of Zen. And she was willing to pay any price for it. And I believe that how to grow a lotus blossom, which is a description of her deepest experience of the perfection of Zen, is a treasure for not only for her, but for all of those who would follow in her footsteps and themselves experience and come to know the perfection of Zen. She said, "I'm in this for myself and at least one other person." And any of us can be that one other person. She certainly didn't need to write How to Grow Lotus Blossom for herself. But she did write it, and it's for that one other person. Any of us, and all of us, can be that other person. How to Grow Lotus Blossom is a book that some people recognize immediately to be a magnificent, helpful work. And is a work that some people immediately react to in a negative way. If there ever was a book that could separate the truly sincere trainee from the hungry ghost, those who long for the truth but can't really stomach it, that's what the hungry ghost means. That book is How to Grow a Lotus Blossom. The fact that the visions that Reverend Master experienced during that magnificent year are represented as pictures has itself, in itself, and by itself, created some negative reaction from some people who somehow got it in their heads that, and without really knowing anything about mysticism apparently, that there's kind of something wrong with having visions. Well, of course, if a person is utterly crazy and they're having what they think of as visions but are actually hallucinations, well, of course, that's one thing. But visions in one form or another are a common experience for many people who've done a good deal of training and gone a certain distance in the conversion of karma. Her master was by no means unique in that. She also made it clear that it's in no way a requirement. It's a vehicle of teaching. It's one of the ways in which the teaching is given. Teaching can be given in other ways. And many people who don't have visions in terms of sense experience, bodily senses, that is visual, visual visions and auditory visions where you hear some teaching being given. Again, these are not hallucinations I'm talking about. I'm talking about valid, genuine spiritual experience. But many people who don't have that kind of vision have another kind of vision that they don't recognize as such, and that is the direct intellectual vision, it's called in medieval theology. But it's not, they're not talking about sitting down and thinking intellectually. They're not talking about the intellect in the sense in which it's come to be thought of in Western civilization in modern times. They're thinking of the intellect as that aspect of our mind that directly apprehends truth, direct insight into truth. So they distinguish between intellectual vision, direct apprehension of truth in understanding, and imaginative visions, again not meaning imagination in the modern sense of you just sit down and imagine something that you cooked up yourself, but imagination in the sense of images, in other words, sense experience. Teaching given via the vehicle of sense experience. So as I say, many people who don't have imaginative visions may have intellectual visions, direct insight, And not being thinking of it as vision, but as much a vision in the technical sense of what vision means in mysticism, as are the imaginative visions. And Reverend Master, of course, had both. And many of her disciples, her senior disciples certainly, have had both. Sometimes I like to stand back from something and look at it from the broadest point of view that I can manage to have a better sense of its meaning. And you can do that with How to Grow a Lotus Blossom. Fundamentally, what is it that's being expressed there? Fundamentally, what is it that's being expressed there? Someone in a situation of great need, getting a hold of the will, turning within for the answer to that need rather than to external things, really allowing the heart to cry out to the eternal, clearing the deck so the heart can cry out to the eternal, then seeing wherever a mess was made in this life and some of the major messes in past lives, the one leaving the major karmic jangles, seeing what those messes are and being sincerely sorry for anything one has done that has caused harm. Why does this come? It comes because one opened the heart to the eternal. The eternal says, right, now this is how we play the game. This is how it's done. You have got to clean up your own house. I can't do it all for you. I won't do it all for you. You made your karma. You have to make an effort to clean it up. And I'll help you. And all the heavy scrubbing in this washing, I'm going to do for you. But you have got to be willing to bear the pain of it and be willing to accept responsibility for what you've done. Well, what comes from that then? A much deeper understanding of how to live life so as not to make those messes. How do we make ourselves so unhappy? How do we spread our unhappiness to others? Think of what an amazing thing it is to learn the answer to that question. And what a rare thing it is. And so out of that sangha, that great contrition and great resolve to clean up the mess, comes the stream of understanding about how to proceed from where one is now so as not to make any more messes, not to create suffering. Of course, that's the precepts. Then what comes from that? When we take these precepts to heart, Dogen says, I'm very broadly paraphrasing here, but basically the whole world opens before one. Everything is new, everything is clean. From these precepts comes forth such a wind and fire that all are driven into enlightenment. And so there is the actual experience of enlightenment. Not only how to live without making the messes, but the great flood of certainty, there is the eternal. There is a true refuge. And to be true to it in one's life, to follow it where it leads, that is salvation. That is enlightenment. And the great flood of joy and of certainty that accompanies this is described in the fourth column, spiritual bathing. So you have here a simple step-by-step description of how to get oriented in the right direction, how to go in that direction, and where it leads. that is the same as the Buddha's Four Noble Truths. When the Buddha voiced this magnificent teaching, some recognized it, embraced it, some resented it, and viewed it as heretical. If the Buddha had been born later, and there was already such a thing as Buddhism, some of the Buddhists would have said, the Buddha is not teaching, this man is not teaching true Buddhism. If you take the Four Noble Truths and throw in the eternal, which is presumed in all of them, you have the five columns. It may be that this magnificent teaching will be buried after our lifetime. We can only do what we can do. But while we are alive, we can treasure it and we can transmit it. There is no higher teaching in Buddhism or in any other religion.
Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.